This is Rabbi Jeff Sachs of Atid and Rabbi Shiva with another installment of our series on the form and function of Torah Shebaal Peh. Tonight, looking at the fourth chapter or section of the Rambam's introduction to his Mishnah commentary on the format of the Mishnah. Okay, welcome back. This is our concluding session for this semester, although I wanted to let you all know that we're going to be continuing precisely where we leave off tonight. We'll be continuing next Zman, starting after Pesach. I think that up on the website at webyeshiva.org today already, they posted information about re-registering for the new semester, and you can just log on and join us for the new semester of Web Yeshiva. Hold on a second. Let me just check. I see that my computer is not plugged in, that the electricity is not plugged in, and that's not good because we would get cut off in the middle. So let me just... Oh, there you go. Okay. Okay, we've been looking at the Rambam's intro to the Rambam's introduction to his Perush HaMishnayot. Until now, we've been talking a little bit about you're right. Thank you very much. Let me turn on the recorder. One moment, please. Okay. We've been talking about Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi and the quality of that great figure and the admiration that the Rambam held for Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, for the project of organizing the Mishnah. And in the fourth chapter of the introduction to the Mishnah commentary, and I just remind you what I've said probably a dozen times already, the Rambam didn't divide these into chapters, and depending upon which edition you're looking at, the chapter markings may vary. But in this fourth chapter, according to the Shilat edition, which we've been using, the Rambam now has a discussion of the format of the Mishnah, of the Torah Shebaal Peh. The Mishnah is divided into, here we have this little handy chart, it's divided into Shisha Sidre Mishnah. This, no doubt, is a review for some people, so if it is, you can just chalk it up to the good efforts of reviewing what you know, and if it's new, then certainly it's worthwhile. The Mishnah is divided into six Sidarim, or six, what we call in English, six orders. I don't know what that means in order, but it means a classification of knowledge. And again, the Rambam admires Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi's undertaking, both for the style in which he cast rabbinic literature up until that point, around the year 200 CE, as well as the form in the organization, which he greatly admires, and which he himself, although striking out in a new path, when he writes the Mishnah Torah 1,000 years later, almost 1,000 years later, the Rambam admires the effort to organize all of rabbinic literature, all of halacha, all of Torah Shebaal Peh, into some kind of order. So the Shisha Sidre Mishnah, which is sometimes abbreviated, we call it Shas, Shin Samech, Shisha Sidre. The six orders is abbreviated as Shas. Colloquially, we refer to Shas as a set of Talmud, the encyclopedic collection of books that you will see on a shelf, the set of the Babylonian Talmud, the Talmud Bavli, we refer to as a Shas. But that's a little bit of a misnomer, because Shas technically refers to the six orders of the Mishnah, which of course forms the backbone of the Talmud, as we'll see later tonight, but technically speaking is referring to the Mishnah upon which the Talmud, the Gemara is organized. Let's look at the Rambam, and then we're going to come back to this chart. The Rambam says, "Kasher ratza lechaber zeh sefer al zot hatavnit ra'a lechalko lechalakim." When he, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, wanted to compose this work, the Mishnah, on a certain format, a tavnit is a frame or a format, he thought that it was proper to divide it into different sections. Now, it's interesting, of course, because the Rambam, I guess, is assuming that there might have been a different way to organize the Mishnah. I was thinking about this the other day when somebody was explaining this to me. One of these computer fellows was, what is it called? Ezra, if you're on and listening, you can pipe in and share your wisdom with us. To defragment my computer, that apparently the way that the computer stores all the information on the hard drive is like, you know, like a series of boxes, and somebody must understand this better than I. Ezra, are you there? Ezra, are you there? So have you been listening to what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So explain to everybody how this works, because it's going to serve as a metaphor for what I'm talking about.
Basically, as you're correct about defrag, different boxes on your hard drive, and it tells you good and bad, different sectors of the hard drive, if it's good or bad.
Right, but it also clears out unused space so that you can more effectively fit things in. Isn't that correct?
Yeah.
Right. So, in other words, the organization of knowledge... Okay, thank you, Ezra. You can mute yourself again if you wish. The organization of knowledge... So, for example, if you think about the Dewey Decimal System... I remember when I was a kid in school, in grade school, I assume this is true for many of you, one of the things that, you know, you learned in elementary school was how to use a library. And you went and they explained, you know, that the accomplishments of the Dewey Decimal System, which then I think was still in fashion, now I think the Library of Congress system, but it's the same idea, that if you organize the books in the library by topic, you need to have some kind of knowledge tree that explains how the different fields of knowledge relate to each other. That there would be general fields of knowledge. So, for example, there's one field of knowledge called religion, and under religion there's philosophy of religion, and then there's Judaism, and there's Christianity, and there's Islam, and there's Hinduism and Buddhism, etc. So that all the books on Hinduism will be, you know, more or less in the same section. But even then, within Judaism, it would be divided, subdivided by Jewish history, the denominationally, rabbinic literature, biblical literature, etc., etc., etc. And all the books would be organized, you know, and then by using the decimals. In other words, if you have five books in a row that are thematically related in such a way that they need to be there, so and then somebody publishes a new book which really belongs thematically between book two and book three, just by using the decimal system, you can. In other words, if this is book 2.1 and the one next to it is book 2.2, and you need to now reorganize your conception of knowledge, you could put a book 2.15 in between those two, and you'd be able to constantly adding decimals, you'd be constantly able to expand or contract or etc. When the National Library was founded in Yerushalayim in the early part of the 20th century, they followed the Dewey Decimal System, but they had a problem because, in other words, in a general library, whatever the decimal system for Judaism is sufficient. But at the National Library in Yerushalayim, which was meant to be the premier library of all Jewish publishing. You know, they asked the Jewish communities throughout the world to send them books, that all Jewish books, that it should be the repository of this. This is the library, it's the proto-library of what became what's today called the National and University Library. It kind of evolved, it morphed into the library of the Hebrew University, but it predates the Hebrew University. It was originally housed, I think, now it's at the campus on Givat Ram, but it was originally housed, I think, on Rehov B'nai Brit, you know, on the outskirts of Mea Shearim, believe it or not. The problem was that when you had a library that was much, much, much fuller by many orders of magnitude than whatever Jewish libraries, whatever general libraries had, it was too rough. So the librarian, who at the time I believe was Gershom Sholom, who later went on to become the great scholar of Kabbalah, he devised for the Jewish section of the system, he devised an expanded tree. But this idea that you can constantly expand the tree out to contain the knowledge is a sense of how to organize knowledge, but it doesn't have to be that way, and you can conceive of many different. I mean, I'm setting up this metaphor. I hope I haven't overdone it. You can conceive of different ways of organizing knowledge, and as long as in theory you can just organize the books in a library based alphabetically by author or by when they get acquired, and as long as the user has a way of finding the book, you look in the card catalog and it tells you where it is on the shelf, it doesn't really matter what's next to it on the shelf. And that's the way the computer works. When your Word documents, for example, that's all the idea that you have files and folders and that there's an actual icon of a manila folder or a manila file, that's just a device that helps us conceptualize how it all works, because we are all used to those old-fashioned manila folders. In a generation from now, computers aren't going to organize that way, because that will be a visual metaphor that'll be meaningless to our children and grandchildren, who don't remember manila file folders, because nobody will have papers anymore to put into a manila file folder. But this idea that in my documents on my computer I have any number of files, and each file can have subdirectories and etc., that doesn't mean that that's the way that the computer actually stores them, right? In other words, it doesn't mean that in the computer this one Word document actually physically lives next to the next Word document. It's just a way of accessing it and archiving it to help me locate what I'm doing. The Mishnah could have been done in a similar way. We can conceive of a parallel universe in which the Mishnah is organized differently. It makes sense to us that it would be organized thematically, but it might have also been organized by the Tana. There might have been a Masechta that had all of the teachings of Rabbi Akiva, and another Masechta that had all of the teachings of Rabbi Hoshua, and another Masechta that had all of the teachings of Rabbi Meir, who serves as the great backbone of the Mishnah. We say generally speaking, that anonymous Mishnayot, or Mishnayot that are not assigned authorship to someone, those anonymous Mishnayot are the opinion of Rabbi Meir, for example. We can conceive that in a parallel universe, that's how the Mishnah might have been organized. So what the Rambam is praising is the organization of the Mishnah. And he tells you that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi organized the Mishnah into six chalakim, and then he lists them for you. But let's just go back to this handy chart. This chart is from a little pamphlet called Aiding Talmud Study. I think I've mentioned it to you a couple of times. It's by Rav Aryeh Carmel. It's usually available in most Jewish bookshops. It's a really handy little guide for the student of Gemara. And in the back they have this chart and many others, and it's the outline of the Shisha Sidre Mishnah. There are six orders of the Mishnah. The first is Zroim. Zroim literally means seeds, but it has to do laws connected with agriculture, which unfortunately is not so applicable today, certainly not in Chutz La'aretz. Even in Eretz Yisrael, it has different meanings. It has different meanings to. It has different meanings to we who live in the post temple era. But this deals with things like truma and maaser, the tithes and obligatory gifts to the Kohanim and the Levi'im that have to be separated out from agricultural produce that's grown in Eretz Yisrael. Bikurim, the first fruits that have to be brought as a sacrifice, as it were. Anyway, on this chart... Oop, what happened to my chart? One moment, I seem to have... There you go. Okay. And the first tractate, the first mesechta in the series is Brachot, which is not technically about agriculture, but since it deals with the blessings that you say on the food, which we're about to be describing, it's included here. On this chart, he lists for you how many chapters there are in each mesechta of Mishnah. Each tractate of Mishnah has commentary of the Gemara, of the Talmud. Now, this is, generally speaking, there's the Mishnah and the Gemara. The Gemara is the commentary on the Mishnah, and together, these two pieces, Mishnah plus Gemara, together, it's referred to as the Talmud. Although, again, colloquially, usually we refer to the whole thing as Gemara. And he tells you how many folio pages there are in each Masechta. Now, you'll see here that in Seder Zroim, only Brachot has commentary of the Gemara. Most Masechtot, most tractates, have Gemara commentary, but not all. There are a few cases, most pronounced here in Zroim, of tractates that have no Gemara commentary in the Bavli. Now, you see, and I hope that we'll have a chance to talk about this more in the next series after Pesach, there are two versions of the Talmud. There's the Bavli, the Babylonian Talmud, and there's the Jerusalem Talmud. The Jerusalem Talmud is also sometimes called, it's called the Talmud Yerushalmi. Sometimes in the old days, before it became a more politically charged term, it used to be referred to as the Palestinian Talmud. Now we generally refer to it as the Jerusalem Talmud, the Yerushalmi. But, you know, once upon a time, the English newspaper that we know as the Jerusalem Post, before 1948, it was called the Palestine Post, when people that were born and lived here were called Palestinians. Rav Kook, you remember Rav Kook? He was a pretty big Zionist. He was a Palestinian, because he lived in Palestine before the establishment of the State of Israel. That's what it said on his identity card or on his passport. It's only in latter days that the term Palestinian takes on a different connotation. You see that all of these Masechtot in Seder Zroim, all of them have commentary of the Yerushalmi. Anybody have a guess as to why the Yerushalmi might pay attention to Seder Zeroyim in a way that the Bavli doesn't? Anybody want to venture a guess? Yeah, exactly, Esther, correct. In other words, the Talmud Yerushalmi was written in, actually probably not in Yerushalayim, it was probably written in the Galil, but it's more practical in a way that life in Chutz La'aretz, in Bavel, in what today is Iraq, is not. So that's Seder Zroyim. Then there's Seder Moed. Moed deals with the Shabbat and the festivals. So you see the Masechta or Shabbat, Erevin, which is ancillary to Shabbat, talking about the construction of Erevin and the prohibition of carrying. Psachim deals with Pesach, etc. Sukkah, Megillah, Rosh Hashanah, Ta'anit, Chagiga, What Hog is missing? Anything noticeably missing from this list? No, Pesach is in Psachim. No, Joel, are you with us tonight? Okay, so what's missing from Seder Moed? Which chag is missing? It's true that Shavuot is missing, but that's because Shavuot doesn't really have, much to be discussed. There's no Masechet of Shavuot because, halachically speaking, it's not a holiday of the same kind of detail as even Purim, which has its own Masechta. So Shavuot is dealt with here and there in other purposes. One of the elements of Shavuot had to do with the korbanot that were brought. That's dealt with in the Masechta that deal with korbanot. But the fact that there's no recipe for cheesecake given in the Gemara, so we don't need a Masechta. Chanukah, where's Chanukah? Chanukah is missing. There's no Masechet Chanukah. There's a Masechet Megillah that deals with principally with Purim, but not exclusively. There's no Masechet Chanukah. Where might the Talmud discuss Chanukah? In other words, if the Talmud doesn't dedicate, or not the Talmud, if the Mishnah doesn't dedicate a Masechta to something. So the Talmud has to find a place to house it, because the Gemara can't make up its own Masechta. It has to work within the framework that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi lays down. So Howard is correct that it's dealt with in Masechet Shabbat. Why in Shabbat? What's the thematic peg on which it gets hung? Right, so the candle lighting of Shabbat to the candle lighting of Chanukah, and it's discussed piggybacked to that. The third Seder is Nashim, which deal with the variety of issues, not so much about women per se, but about the relationships between men and women. And then there's some other topics that are piggybacked to that. So, for example, you see that we start with Yevamot. Now it's interesting. The Rambam will have something to say about the order of the Masechtot within each Seder. But just looking at this chart, what might you intuit about how the Masechtot get ordered within each Seder? Yeah, it seems to be organized according to descending size. That the larger, there's some exceptions, notably here, but generally speaking, it's in descending order of size of chapters. Generally, the size of the pages of Talmud correspond, because the more chapters of Mishnah, the more pages of Talmud you need, although not always, because you might have one Masechta that has much much discussion on any given Mishnah. So you see that here, for example, in Moed, Erevin has fewer dapim than Psachim. Well, it's hard to say. In other words, there's some masechtot that, look, I mean, you wouldn't want to, it would be hard to say what's more important than another. But there's certain topics that are a little more grave than others. So, for example, Shabbat is obviously more complex, let's say, than Megillah or even Sukkah. Just because Shabbat much, much more complex. There's more, it's more frequent, but it's also, you have to deal with all of the mitzvot asei, candle lighting and kiddush and lechem mishnah, etc. And certainly all the mitzvot, lo ta'asei, the 39 melachot, and the isurei derabanan. And there's just many more topics to deal with. Shabbat, of course, is also a deals with stringencies and severities that you don't have in Masechet Megillah, which is, of course, dealing almost principally with a derabanan. But it's hard to say that one is more important than the other. I mean, Pesach is also pretty important. And it also deals with very severe halachot about chametz and not eating chametz. You know, it's coming up. Maybe you've started to clean. So you know that it's like a big deal. So it's hard to say important. It's hard to say what's more important and what's not more important, but the larger the Masechta, it's probably an indicator of the complexity of the topic under discussion. So it seems that the organization within anyone's Seder has something to do with the size, and from the size you can intuit something about the content. So Nashim deals with mostly the relationships between men and women. So, for example, Kiddushin deals with how marriage is formed. Gittin talks about how marriage is unformed. The fact that Gittin comes before Kiddushin is because Gittin is more complicated than Kiddushin and has more chapters, etc. There are, of course, some that have tried to say svarot about why you would put divorce before marriage, but those are generally, you know, the types of, you know, cynical comments that people have about marriage. There's some other topics dealt with in Nashim that aren't necessarily man and woman or husband and wife related, but insofar as marriage is constituted through some kind of vow, some type of commitment between husband and wife, or from husband to wife. The Gemara also deals with Masechet Nidarim, which has to do with vows and promises, and a type of contract, I suppose. And there it is, right after Ketubot, which is, of course, the marriage contract. Nezikin is the, you know, is civil law, property law, damages, etc. It also has to do with the organization of the courts there in Masechet Sanhedrin and Makot. Shavuot deals, this is not Shavuot, Shavuos, the cheesecake holiday, this is Shavuot oaths that a court might impose on someone to take a shivu'ah, an oath in court and elsewise, etc. And right there is Masechet Avot, which we're going to have something to say in a moment. Kodshim deals with the sacrifices, and Taharot deals with the whole realm of Tahor and Tame and purity and impurity, etc. You'll notice that Taharot also is largely lacking in Gemara, both in the Bavli as well as the Yerushalmi. The Rambam. So those are the Shisha Sidre Mishnah: Zroim, Moed, Nashim, Nezikin, Kodshim, and Taharot. It's known by the acronym Zman Nakat, which, you know, either may or may not help you remember. The Rambam says, Kara kol chelek mehem seder, v'kara chelek arishon seder zroyim, sheni moed, shlishi nashim, nezikin, kodshim, tarot. And then, let me just skip ahead a bit. Then the Rambam gets into this interesting discussion where he looks at each Seder and he explains the flow within each and every of the six Sedarim. explaining why this Masechta comes before that Masechta. Now, it's interesting that he does this, because as Esther pointed out, it seems pretty clear why one Masechta comes before another. It has something to do with size. It has something to do with the size of the Masechta, and that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was not necessarily trying to make a statement about the organization of knowledge within any one topic. Even if you look at Moed. So Moed, if somebody was telling you that they're organizing the book, let's say you have, look, I have a nice library here. I'm sitting in a nice library here. When I was younger and I had fewer books and I had more room and I didn't share my house with children that I love but who take up some space, my library was a picture of organization. I had my own intuitive, you know, Jeffrey decimal system where, you know, this book was next to that book, and it was obvious to anyone that knew anything about Jewish books why one was next to the other. Now the books are all organized based upon where they fit. And I still have, like, piles. I still have, you know, piles of the odd book here and there. You know, there you go. Like, there's, like, the new acquisitions pile that haven't found a home yet. And, you know, and over there are the books that fit above on those narrow shelves above the desk, etc. I'll give you just the virtual tour. But my books on the Jewish holidays, on the Chagim, well, all the books on Shabbat were organized together, obviously. And then all the books on the Chagim, how do you think they were organized? What would be a reasonable way to organize them? Yeah, according to the calendar of the year, either starting with Rosh Hashanah, and then the books on Yom Kippur were after Rosh Hashanah, and the books on Sukkot were after Yom Kippur, and then you had Hanukkah, and then you had Purim, and then you had the Pesach books, etc., etc. Right? But look at Seder Moed. That's not how it's organized. It's neither organized chronologically according to the calendar. In which case Rosh Hashanah, which is here, should have been before Yuma, which deals with Yom Kippur, Yoma, the day, right? It's a nickname for Yom Kippur. So Rosh Hashanah should have been before Yom Kippur, and in all cases they should have been next to each other, right? So there's no organization. Beitza here deals generally with the laws of Yom Tov, right? And it's stuck there in the middle, mittedin of everything else, right? So the fact that Shabbat comes first, that Shabbat is Rishon Hu LeMikroi Kodesh, that we say that Shabbat is the first among the Jewish holy days, it's first, but it's there, obviously, not because it's Rishon Hu LeMikroi Kodesh, it's there, it's first because it's the biggest of the Masechtot, right? And, you know, so there doesn't seem to be a thematic connection. But nevertheless, the Rambam gives this drasha, which seems to be clear. By drasha, I mean a homily. I don't mean drasha with a capital D like we were talking about a little while ago about, you know, the exegesis of the psukim. It's a drasha. It's a homily. He's trying to explain the organization of each Seder. Now, even though he was obviously aware that, like what Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's, you know, principle of organization was within any one Seder, but nevertheless, he thought we could learn something about the connection of knowledge. And even that says something, that the organization of the Masechtot, you know, we can even ex post facto look at it and make a statement about the connection of fields of wisdom. Elsewhere, the Rambam has an idea that the real pit pinnacle of Jewish learning is to be able to extrapolate everything that you know to everything else. Lomed davar mitoch davar. He's talking in a specific context, not in a general context, so it's not completely fair to apply it here. But for the Rambam, that notion of the interconnections, the integrative nature of all knowledge, so you can take any, 20 books and like lay them out on your dining room table and be able to connect the dots of how everything is, pardon me, almost like a parlor game, what do they call it? 6 degrees of separation, right? And there's to explain like how all of knowledge is organized. It's an integrative, it's like the metaphor that we use of the Yam HaTalmud, the sea of Jewish learning. There's that lovely poster from Beit HaTfutzot. I'm sure if you Google it, you can find a picture of it online, of the Yam HaTalmud from Beit HaTfutzot, from the Diaspora Museum in Tel Aviv, which literally looking like a map of an ocean in the continent traces the history of the Torah Sheba'al Peh from Moshe up until the 20th century. Let me see if I can find that. Where is it? I can't. Oh, here you go. Oh, beautiful, beautiful. There's a beautiful. I think it seems to be interactive. Even here, I'm putting the link up in the box. But the visual metaphor of. There you go. The link is up in the chat. If you're able, just look at it for a second. The visual metaphor of the Yam HaTalmud is a telling one for a number of reasons. Just like the ocean is interconnected. If I put my toe, in the water, in the Mediterranean, so it, I'm somehow connected through the ether to the person standing in New Jersey with his toe in the Atlantic, to the person even in far-flung Hawaii with their toe in the Pacific. That's what the Jewish learning is. That's why it's the metaphor of the ocean. And that's why the Torah is compared to... That's why the Torah is compared to... To what? What's the classic metaphor for Torah? Is water. Right? And it's in Chazal... Chazal use the notion of water. The Torah is compared to water, partially because of this, the connection between all of the constituent parts and the flow of everything. So that, I assume, is part of what the Rambam is trying to telegraph with this lengthy, digressive homily on the connection between the Masechtot and why one flows into the other, when again it's pretty obvious what the real organizational purpose of it was. However, the Rambam goes into this discussion here. Let me just skip ahead. The Rambam goes into this lengthy discussion, this side point, when he gets to Masechet Avot. Now, we all know Avot. Avot is also called Pirkei Avot, the chapters of the father, the chapters of the fathers, Masechet Avot. What is Masechet Avot dealing with? What's the issue that's dealt with? Yeah, man to man, ethics, right? It's sometimes it translates as the ethics of the fathers. When so Masechet Avot is is in Seder Nezikin, is in the section that deals with how the courts should work, how the civil law works. So the Rambam says here, Kasher nishlam lo kol ma sheyitzarich alav hashofet. Right, after discussing everything that a judge needs to know, hechel be'avot. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi starts discussing Masechet Avot. Now, this is particularly interesting because Avot is in many ways the odd man out. It's really the Masechta which belongs everywhere and nowhere. There's no, on the surface of it, there's no reason that it should be in any one Seder over the other. Because it doesn't fit in, you know, clearly with any of the others. Even Brachot, which in its Seder, in Zra'im, is the odd man out. But we understand why it's there. Brachot deals with Brachot, with blessings that you say over food. Piggyback to that discussion is the entire topic of prayer, of Tefillah, and of Shema. But that's there because of its connection to blessings. All of the different types of prayers that you make, but insofar as the bulk of it deals with the brachot before and after eating, so then put it into the seder that deals with the production of food, but avot is really it's just so different than every other masechta in its content, in its area of focus, in its concern, in its style. It's really unusual compared to the other Masechtot of Mishnah. So why is it here in Nezikin after the discussion of, you know, how judges function? So he says there's shtei kavanot. There are two reasons. Hachat lehodiacha amitat hamesoret v'hakabala shehi emet. V'kiblu ha-rabim me-rabim, l'fichach ro'i l'chabed ish ha-chacham, u'le'achshivo b'chashivut elyona. L'fi she-hegia ha-kabbalah elav, sh'u b'doro k'mo elu b'dorotayam. That avot is a testimony both to the integrity of the Masorah, because it's talking about the Chochmei HaMasorah. It's talking about the nature of the Rabbanim, of Chazal. And therefore, studying that leads you to appreciate and to respect Chachamim. And that might be a worthy effort to make when talking about the role and scope and powers and authority of the Batei Din, of the judges, right? Then he points out, V'kach Amru, yeah, this is a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, it's actually a Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, Im banu lachkor achar beit dino shel Rabban Gamliel, v'chulei v'chulei, Vamru, here he has a different gear, so Shimshon Bedoro, Kishmul Bedoro, we talk about Yiftach Bedoro, Kishmul Bedoro. That each and every generation, even though we have this notion of Pchita Tadorot, of Yerida Tadorot, that somehow our generation isn't as worthy or holy or great, our leaders are not as remarkable as those of the generation that came before them, and those of the generation that became before them, nevertheless, the authority of the leadership in each and any generation is equivalent to the authority of the generations that came before. And this is part of the context of a larger discussion, a topic that we discussed actually in the very beginning when we were discussing the Gemara about Tanur Shel Achnai. This is the Machloket in Rosh Hashanah about the calendar, that if we're going to start examining the Bet Din of Rabban Gamliel, it calls into question all of the Batei Din. that we have to have belief in the integrity of the system in each and every generation. And that might be one of the purposes of the placement of Masechet Avot here, because it reinforces this. Uveze yesh musar levnei adam, shelo yamru, let me turn the page, shelo yamru, shelo yamru adam, shelo yamru, mishpat ploni nikabel, b'takanat ploni na'amin, vein hadavar kein, ki ha-mishpat eino leploni ha-shofet, ela la-Hashem asher tzivanu bo. In other words, the Chachamim themselves are great because they are subservient to the law that they serve. Even though he makes this idea that we don't, in other words, like in America, it's common to refer to different periods, like in constitutional law. There was this piece I was reading this week about the American Supreme Court, and they talk about the Roberts Court versus the Rehnquist Court versus the Warren Court. So even though we also talk about this Beit Dino Shel Rabban Gamliel, but the Rambam's making a point, it's not the Mishpat of Rabban Gamliel, it's not the Mishpat of Rabbi Akiva, it's the Mishpat of Hashem, and they are part of whoever is in the Beit Din, whoever's in the court at any given point is the emissary of God at any given point. They're the interpreters of the divine at any given point, but they are subservient to to God. Let me v'tzarech efo ha-shofet lehitchanech b'chol ma shekulelet oto masechet avot. And here the Rambam, makes this other point. Hold on. That therefore it's imperative for each and every judge to prepare himself, to dedicate himself, to educate himself to all of the topics that are addressed in Masechet Avot, which are matters of ethics, which are matters of the refinement of the human personality. Midot, what we call colloquially midot, the Rambam sometimes calls deot, personality traits. Ben and Barbara mentioned in the chat that Avot seems to not be so argumentative. Correct, it's not argumentative in the sense of trying to determine what's the psak halacha. As a matter of fact, Rabbi Soloveitchik made the point that Avot is different than every other mesechta, because in every other mesechta, if there's a machloket about sukkah, whether sukkah is this or that, we need a resolution. We need to know that this is what a sukkah normatively is, because we all need to be sitting in the same sukkah. We all need to have one definition for what a sukkah is. But in Avot, you don't have the resolution. If there are two different opinions about orientations, about outlook, so we don't need to have a resolution to that. We don't need to have a resolution to that, about this is a preferable way of looking at something, or that's a preferable way of looking at something. It's left open to different interpretations, as it were. Let me again just skip ahead. We're running out of time a little bit. Here, let me just go ahead to... After the mission is organized, now as the mission is organized... the mission is organized into nistayma kol chalukat ma'amar v'hayu kol mesechtot ha-mishnah 61. There are 61 mesechtot u'mispar prakim 523 chapters of Mishnah. Now, it would be a good undertaking for anyone to learn every Mishnah in Shas. Now, you know that we have this project called the Daf Yomi, where you learn a daf, meaning two sides of a page, two sides of the same page, a folio page of Gemara every day, and in about 7.5 years, you finish all of Shas. And they have a big celebration, they have big celebrations all around the world. That's a worthy thing to do, but maybe even more worthy is to, from an educational point of view, from a social point of view, the Daf Yomi is a fantastic thing. Even though very often people say that they don't retain everything that they learn. But if you were to learn all of the Mishnah, which is an undertaking that you could do, if not in a year, then in a year and a half. If you learned a perek a day, a chapter of Mishnah a day, you could do it in about a year and a half. If you do a chapter and a half a day, you can do it in about a year. If you do 10 chapters a week, you can do it in about a year. Now, I know this because I did it once. You have to be a little bit obsessive, otherwise you fall behind. But if you were to do that, you would amass a tremendous amount of knowledge. And since there are many wonderful tools that enable people to learn the Mishnah and to make sense of it, and to even determine what's the halakha l'maaseh, because that's not always apparent from the Mishnah, or even the kahati, which gives you all of the background. You know, do you know what the kahati is? Rav Pinchas Kahati, he lived in Beit Vegan. He must have died about 20 years ago or so. He actually worked in the bank. But he was a Talmid Chacham, he was a scholar, and he wrote a commentary on the Mishnah, which was meant to give you all of the background information you need to learn any one particular Mishnah. He never assumes any outside knowledge beyond the previous Mishnah. If you're reading a Mishnah and you can't make sense of it, then learn the previous Mishnah, and if all of the knowledge that you need isn't there, he's going to end up giving it to you, by way of introduction. So even if all you were to do were to read the introduction, and the Kahati, I think the commentary of Kahati has also been translated into English as well, and you can get that. If you were just to read the introductions to each Masechta, which he has an introduction to each Masechta, sometimes also to each Seder, if you were just to read the introductions to the 61 Masechtot, most of which is not more than a page or two, you would amass a lot of very, very useful knowledge. It would fill in a lot of gaps in your knowledge. Now, again, don't get me wrong. Learning merely the introductions written by Rav Kahati is not the same as actually learning the Mishnayos. But this is a worthy endeavor to undertake. It's a project that you could undertake. That's the Mishnah. The Rambam then points out that Rabbi Chiya composed in the footsteps of his great teacher and master, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, he composed the Tosefta. We've spoken about this before. The Tosefta, do not confuse Tosefta with Tosfot or Tosfos, the commentary that appears on the side of the Gemara, on the inside margin of the Gemara. The Tosefta is something else entirely. The Tosefta is an appendix to the Mishnah. It's usually printed at the back of every volume of Talmud. You can find the Tosefta, or of course there are also editions just of the Tosefta. The Tosefta is an appendix to the Mishnah. It's written in a style that looks and feels and smells like the Mishnah, but it's of secondary authority and importance to the Mishnah. Then he also points out, the Rambam also points out, that there were other Tanaitic works, works from the period of the Chachamim of the Mishnah, particularly the Sifra and the Sifrei. The Sifra is the Medrash Halacha to Sefer Vayikra, which we're starting this week. The Sifrei is the Medrash Halacha on Bamidbar and Dvarim, on the Numbers in Deuteronomy. What the Sifra has another name, it has another nickname. Does anybody know what that is? Rashi calls it something else. No? Anyone? So the Rambam, the Rambam, Rashi also refers to, not just Rashi, but Rashi specifically refers to the Sifra as Torat Kohanim. As Torat Kohanim, because it deals with Vayikra, so it deals with many in Leviticus, it deals with many of the things related to the Kohanim and the Korbanot and etc. Although, obviously, not only that. So when Rashi quotes Torat Kohanim, he's quoting the Sifra, which is the Medrash Halacha on Sefer Vayikra. On Sefer Vayikra. This body of Tanaitic literature, principally again the Mishnah. One moment, let me just skip ahead here. Principally the Mishnah, the Rambam says, V'chomi she'amad acharav, all those that came after Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Again, the Mishnah is completed around the year 200. Everyone that comes afterwards, v'achrei oto achabura nichbada, after the Mishnah is composed, amnam, or the group of chachamim, amnam haita tachlito havanat divrei ha-Mishnah, v'lo chadal dor achar dor lehitbonen ba lefarsha. People were focused on the proper commentary and interpretation of the Mishnah. And never was there a generation which neglected the study and interpretation of the Mishnah. Kol chacham lefi erech achmato vinato, v'nechleku beferushei ketzat halachot mimenu b'meshach hashanim. It's not surprising that the Amoroyim, the chachamim that came in the period, in the 300 or so years after the Mishnah is composed, that there were differences of opinion about the proper interpretation of certain halachot, of certain mishnayot. V'ein kat shelo hitbananaba, v'holida mimenu toladot, v'chakra mimenu chakirot, ad shehegia hazman shel ravina v'rav ashi. V'heim sof chochmei talmud. And then, just like Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi undertook this massive undertaking of organizing all of the teachings of the Chachamim in the generations prior to him, after about 300 years of commentary and debate on the Mishnah, Ravina and Rav Ashi undertake a similar project of composing what we call the Gemara. Now again, since Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi has already done this, they don't need to undertake the organizational project. They use the outline, they use the skeleton of the Mishnah to organize their discussion. The Dewey Decimal System's already been set up. They're just trying to figure out how to organize their library of teaching, and they do that based upon the same framework. And they organize their discussions around the Mishnayot. Around the Mishnayot. Now, there are going to be certain discussions that don't fit in with a Mishnah, like the Chanukah discussion, because Chanukah is not discussed in the Mishnah. So they have to find the place where thematically it fits in the best, or they have to find the springboard that's most appropriate for a new discussion. Right? And sometimes you can wonder how the Gemara gets from one thing to the other, and the Gemara is much more associative in that way than the Mishnah is, because the Mishnah is a smaller work, it's a tighter work. The Mishnah doesn't have agadic material, or it largely doesn't have agadic material, which has to be organized, as well. The Rambam is going to mention that in a moment. Vehitbodeid Rav Ashi lechaber chibur ve'ra'ala sot bedivrei kol mi shebach Rabbeinu Hakadosh. Kasher asa Rabbeinu HaKadosh b'divrei kol mi shebach acharei Moshe. So Ravina and Rav Ashi do for the 300 years of interpretation what Rabbeinu HaKadosh, what Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi did for everything up until from Moshe Rabbeinu up until his day. V'kibetz kol ma'amrei ha'omrim v'hitbonenut ha'mitbonenim u'ferush ha'mifarshim v'dikdek ha'shmuot v'kibtzan v'yekiv v'akol b'dato v'asher chananu Hashem mirocha v'alei v'avat ha'chachma v'chiber ha'talmud. The organization and the composition of the Talmud, what we call the Gemara. V'sam kavanato bo arba'ad varim. And there were four areas of focus in the Gemara. In the Gemara. So let's just talk about these, and then we'll continue with this when we meet again after Pesach. Ha'echad, Perush HaMishnah. The first objective of the Gemara is to interpret the Mishnah. V'chol ma shenafal bedvarim ha'misupakim, Sheba mimachloket ha'perushim, v'tanot kol mefaresh al chavero, v'gilui tanata emet, v'zeh ha'kavana ha'rishona shenitkavein. To interpret the Mishnah and to arrive at a normative interpretation and a normative law. Hasheni, psak halacha kedat echad achokim asher nafla machloktam beguf haMishnah o beperusha o bemotzei mimenu v'hamukashlav. So this is the determining the first is determining the proper interpretation. The second is determining the proper normative law. Hashlishi. Hatoladot asher holidu chachmei kol dor min haMishnah, v'gilui haikarim v'harayot asher lamdu mehem v'samchu aleihem atanaim hamidabrim b'Mishnah ad shenikba midivreihem ma shenikba v'agzerot v'atakanot asher nitkanu me'acharei Rabbeinu HaKadosh ad alav. So there's new material. There are new things. There are toladot. There are descendants. Their discussion gets continued, and new issues come up, and applications of old principles have to be made, and new gzerot and takanot, new institutions and new declarations and new prohibitions and new mitzvot, and things arise, and we have to deal with them as they come up, because no one book, no matter how encyclopedic, no matter how wonderful or great the accomplishment of the Mishnah, no one book can cover everything. So as new things come up, there are toladot, there are new topics, and that also has to be dealt with. And the fourth, drashot matimot l'inyan kol perek shehizdamein shimtza bo drash. This is what we call agada. Agada, and the Rambam will discuss that in the upcoming chapters. The whole realm of the of Agada, which we talked about a little bit last semester when we learned the Hakdama LaPerek Chelek, and we will get into further. So that's the outline of the Talmud, and the Rambam will continue from there. When we continue after Pesach, I wish you all a Chag Kosher V'Sameach, a happy and healthy, meaningful Pesach, and Bezras Hashem will have the opportunity to continue learning afterwards. Laila Tov.